family background. Were you born around here?
Yes, sir. Born 18 miles from here on a farm.
I see. Grew up on a farm, huh?
Yes.
Did you develop your pitching arm on the farm?
Yeah, I reckon so. We played baseball every Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
We did a little team in the county, you know.
Did you practice throwing rocks at tin cans on the fence?
Oh, Lord, yes. I threw a million rocks in my time.
I've heard that so many pitchers who grew up on farms, you know, just practice like that.
Yes.
How many were in your family?
Well, there was four boys. There was five born and one died. It meant infancy. There's three of us living.
Are they all as big as you?
Well, one of them bigger than I am. And my other brother's not as big.
How tall were you, or are you?
6'4",
about?
6'4" and a quarter.
Is your dad pretty big? Your dad, is he pretty big?
Oh, Lord, 6'6", and 285 pounds.
Is that right? Did he play any ball?
No.
How about your brothers?
No. Well, one of them, the younger one, he played ball in college. And he played ball in the summertime, not pro ball, but amateur ball in the summertime.
Pretty hard work on the farm, was it?
Oh, Lord, yes. Yes, sir. We set tobacco with a peg, you know, just come along and stick a peg in there and to the plant. And when you got to the end of the rows, you couldn't straighten up. You had to lie down and straighten up just gradually. Yeah, we did everything.
Did you want to go to college all the while as a boy?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I made up my mind I was going to college. I wasn't going on a farm.
So you went to Guilford College, right?
That's right.
When did you start in there? Do you remember what year?
1909. Okay. This is Mr.
Bernacher. Glad to meet you.
Hello, I'm Margaret Matthews.
What did you study at Guilford?
I took a BS degree.
Bachelor of Science, huh? What did you major in?
Mathematics.
Oh, did you? Did you have future plans in business?
No, not exactly.
You just were going to be ready if baseball didn't work out, was that?
That's right.
Did you have any trouble making the team there at Guilford?
Not much trouble, no, sir.
How about your, did you play high school baseball? Did you have a team in high school?
Yes, East Bend.
What kind of a record did your team have?
Well, I don't remember. I think it was just an average team. But Guilford, we had the best team in the country.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. I won 24 games. And lose one and tied one in the last 2 years.
Did you have many scouts looking you over then? Or didn't they scout in those days?
Oh, the Giants umpired the game on Easter Monday. I pitched, and they offered me a contract to come to the Giants in 1912. And I went to the Johns after school was out and stayed down about the middle of September. We went back to Guilford.
You stayed with the team?
Yeah.
The Giants that whole 1912, huh?
Yeah.
Let me see how we're coming in here. Okay, 1912 now. Did you do any playing with them or just sit on the bench? Or?
Sit on the bench. I just went in one game.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They had Marquardt and Mathewson and wasn't much
Wilson
room.
Wilson and Tetherell.
Oh, thank you so much. A little bit. No wonder he didn't get in with that pitching staff, huh?
Oh.
Rube Marquardt's still living, isn't he? Up around Baltimore, I guess.
I think he's up in New York, isn't he?
Is he? Uh-huh. Pretty old timer. What was it like being up with the Giants? Were they world champions then, or?
They won the pennant, but Boston beat them in the World Series.
Quite a thrill to be up with the Giants?
Well, yes, I enjoyed it. Because I got to travel a lot and see a lot.
Had you been to the big city before, or is that a new experience?
That's a new experience.
I bet that was exciting.
Yeah.
You hear these stories about how the old veteran ball players give the new rookies a hard time. They ride them and so on.
No.
They give you a hard time?
No.
Uh-huh.
Not a bit. Old Chief Myers was a catcher. He took me in under his wing and showed me everything all over the country.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He was the Indian, wasn't he?
Yeah.
How did you like John McGraw when you first met him?
I liked him all right when I first met him.
Sounds like you didn't like him later, huh? Is he helpful or nasty or?
Yeah, nasty. You know, the cushion and the Frazier.
He knew his baseball, though, huh? Or didn't he?
I guess he did. But he didn't develop many players. He always bought them.
Yeah.
Frazier's the only one that he developed.
Fisher?
No, Frazier.
Frisch. Yeah, Frankie Frisch. It says here for 1912 that you went home dissatisfied.
Well,
what does that mean? Do you remember anything about that? It says for 1912 with New York, you had no average, you went home dissatisfied.
Because he let us go, was about three or four of us, with the going to win the pennant and set all those rookies home. So we wouldn't be in the World Series.
Did you get paid that year, though? You got a salary.
Up to the end of September.
What'd they pay you, do you remember?
No.
Well, did they send you a contract for 1913, Giants? Did you sign that?
No.
What happened then, 1913?
I asked them to give me my release, and they gave it to me.
Okay, then you went to Utica?
No.
No? Where'd you go after you got your release from the Giants?
Came back home, played ball with Greensburg and Carolina League.
How did you do down there? Did you just go over to Greensboro and ask them for a job, or did they sign you? They seek you out?
Well, the coach at Guilford College managed a team.
Oh, I see. Who was he, do you remember?
Charlie Doak.
Doak? Well, he knew all about you then, huh?
Yeah.
So, I was in the North Carolina League, Greensboro. Was that a pretty tough league that year?
Well, just average, D league.
Well, you had 11 and 12, it says here. Won 11, lost 12. And...
No, won 13 and lost 13.
Is that right? You better write that down here. These old record books.
Yeah.
They're filled with mistakes.
Oh, yes.
You don't remember going to Utica at all, huh?
I didn't remember to go there.
But you, it says maybe the Giants released you there, and then you didn't report and you went back home. Is that it?
No. Utica wasn't mentioned.
Uh-huh. I wonder how they got that in there. Anyhow, how did you get to Baltimore then?
They drafted me.
Did they?
13, by the fall of 13. Mm-hmm.
Did they have scouts down here looking over you?
I don't know about
that.
You
don't remember that, huh? Were you happy to go up to Baltimore? Or?
Yeah, I'm happy to go any place. Needed money.
Uh-huh. Did you work on the farm when you were back here? Any?
No.
You're still living at home, though, were you?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, tell me about Baltimore then in 1914. How was things up there?
Well, good. We had the best team in the minor leagues.
Was Ruth with you that spring?
Yeah. We were 15 games in the lead when I left there. I just stayed there a month. Uh-huh. Reported on June the 4th or 5th. And Ruth and I were sold to Boston on the 10th of July. I won 4 games and lost the last game by 1-0.
How'd you like Jack Dunn?
Good.
He knew baseball, didn't
yes.
he? Well, that was the year the Federal League had a team in Baltimore,
yes,
too,
right.
Wasn't it? It kind of wrecked attendance, didn't it? Didn't they have a ballpark right across the street?
Yeah, right. Back-to-back. Stands were back-to-back.
Is that right?
We could have beat them 9 times out of 10.
The Feds, huh?
Yeah.
Is that right? Well, how was attendance for your team?
In Baltimore? The last day we played with 15 games in lead, had 19 paid admission. That's right.
Not very many, huh?
That's what he had to sell.
Yeah.
Sold 16, I think, to the big league.
How'd you like the Babe in those early days?
Good. I like Babe all right.
He's as wild then as he always was?
Well, I'd say he's just as wild because he's pinned up all of his life.
Yeah.
And he got out and just like turned the animal loose.
Yeah.
But he's a good-hearted boy that ever lived.
Yeah.
And I could do more with him than anybody else.
You could what?
Do more with him. He listened to me more than anybody else.
Well, He had a pretty tough family background, didn't he, to overcome?
Evidently, I don't know. His father was a bartender.
Yeah.
I never did hear him mention his mother. I don't know.
Oh, is that right? Well, so now you're up to Boston. You joined them on late July, was it?
No, about June. The 10th or 11th of July. I stayed in Baltimore just a month.
Okay. Now, who did they have on the pitching staff up there at Boston when you and Ruth came up there?
And Joe Wood, Dutch Leonard, George Foster.
Was Mays with them yet? Carl Mays?
No, he came up the next year.
So, who was your manager, Kerrigan? Or?
Yeah.
How'd you like him?
Best manager there ever been.
Was he catching still? Was he playing? He was a catcher, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was active still?
He caught Leonard all the time. That's the only one that he caught.
I see. So who was on the team then? Do you remember some of the players on the Red Sox?
I remember all of them.
Yeah? Did you give some of the names of this team?
Gardner was third baseman, Scott was second baseman, the shortstop. Then Jack Barrett came up. He was short on second base. Hoblitz was first base.
He's from right near where I live, West Parkersburg, West Virginia.
Yeah.
So he's
and Lewis Spickard and a couple of the outfield.
That wasn't a bad outfield, was it?
No, sir.
One of the greatest.
Yes, no question.
I tried to interview Duffy Lewis when I was up in Boston one time. And he lives up in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be interviewed for some reason.
No.
So I didn't. I never got to see Speaker or Hooper.
Yeah.
I've talked to Joe Wood. He's about the only one on that team that I've talked to him up in New Haven.
I think New Haven in the wintertime and Pennsylvania in the summer.
You got a nice summer home, I guess. There.
Yeah.
Okay, did Kerrigan put you right into the starting rotation then?
Yes, sir. I pitched the second day in Boston. Babe pitched the first day, and I pitched the second day.
Do you remember that game?
Yes.
Who were you pitching against?
Cleveland.
How'd you do?
Beat him 2-1, two hits.
Uh-huh. Is that in Boston?
Yeah.
Well, that was quite a thrill.
Yes.
Okay. Says you won 10 and lost 5 that year. Is that right?
How's that?
10-5 in 19.
10-4.
With a 1.90 ERA.
That's right.
That's right. That's some pitching for 145 innings.
I don't remember the earned run average. I don't remember that.
That's good.
I think in the next year I had about 146.
It says 1.64. 164. Does that sound about right?
I thought it was a little bit. Thought it was 146, but it might have been 164.
Okay. So you pitched. How did the Red Sox finish up in 1914?
I don't know. Remember where they finished in 14.
That was the year Connie Mack won that year, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then he lost the World Series to the Braves and broke up his team. Okay, and who was the other catcher there? Heinie Wagner?
No. Katie. Katie was my catcher.
Katie.
Forrest Katie.
Well, you came back home here to your home during that winter?
Yes, sir.
What'd you do in the off season those years?
Hunt. Hunting.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Good hunting country, I'll bet, huh?
Yeah.
Now, did they give you a pretty nice increase in pay for next year?
Well, fair.
Who was the owner of the Red Sox then? Lennon?
Lennon.
Joe Lennon, huh?
Yep.
He was a pretty square dealer, was he?
Yes, sir.
So you didn't hold out in 1915?
No.
Well, tell me about 15. That was a good year, 20-7.
Yeah.
You 247 innings.
That was in 15, 20-7. 15.
And you won the pennant that year, right?
Yeah, I won the pennant that year, the next year.
Was it a pretty easy season? I mean, what did you win the, how many games did you win by? 15, was it
30? Well, we won by 19-15. We beat Detroit about, we won 101 games, they won 100.
Oh. A close one.
The only team that ever won 100 ball games and didn't win the pennant.
Do you remember any of your victories in that year? Does any game stand out in your mind in 19?
Yes, sir.
Could you tell me about some of those good ones you had in 1915?
I beat Detroit 1-0, 12 innings. That was, it was on Saturday, the biggest crowd had ever witnessed a ball game in Boston. And Ty Cobb led off in the 12th inning with a little pop fly in the crowd back at second base. They were back at second base. The outfield, all around.
They had the crowd on the field and roped
yeah.
off. Huh?
And Beach sacrificed him to third. He got two bases on the hit in the crowd. And when we messed up his bunt, and put a man on first, and a man on third, nobody out. And Sam Crawford was coming up. And Carrigan came out to the mound, and he said, "What are you going to do with Crawford?" I said, "I'm going to walk him." He said, "Well, I think that's the thing to do." So I walked Crawford, filled the bases, nobody out. And Burns was supposed to come up. I shook him out two or three times, and then sit in Kavanaugh, pinch hit him. And he hit the shortstop, and he forced Cobb at the plate. And Young, the second baseman, came up, and he hit to the first baseman, and he forced the Beach at the plate. Well, Beach did run for some reason.
Oh.
And Crawford was on second, and he didn't run because Beach didn't run.
Oh.
And threw to third base and had a double play.
So then, how'd you get the run in the last of the inning?
In our 12th. I don't remember who got on, but I came up and Kerrigan pinch hit for me, and Katie was on first, and he hit the second baseman, and he threw to to the shortstop for double play, and Katie ran over the shortstop, and the man, his own base, scored.
Some game. There was some pitching there in that ninth inning, or 12th inning.
Yes.
Bases loaded, nobody out. How did you pitch to Cobb?
I pitched low and outside.
Did you get him out pretty well? Or?
Yeah, I don't think... I beat him five times that year. Detroit five times.
But when you pitch low and away to Cobb, wouldn't he just go with that pitch and hit it out to left field? Or?
Well...
He could hit about anything, I thought.
I had a sinking ball. If he hit it, he hit it to the infield. There's room. And he got him out. I had the first sinker that ever got it up the big league. And if it was breaking, I could beat anybody.
Is that a snap of the wrist, or how do you...
No, it's just... I don't know.
Oops.
It's low.
You don't want to miss this.
See that? Yeah. I gripped it with this finger.
Your index finger.
I had them break that far.
About a foot.
Just like that.
Down. Well,
and they hit it on top. In the infield. Outfielder didn't have very much to do.
How about pitching to Joe Jackson?
Oh, same way, but he was the greatest hitter in my time.
You figure he's better than Cobb?
Yeah. He was a more dangerous hitter. He didn't have a batting average at Cobb had, but
it's pretty good.
Cobb had a lot of bunts, beat out a lot of bunts.
Cobb always said he could hit a long ball if he tried, though. He just
I don't know about that.
Didn't try too much.
He tried to get on all the time.
Is he tough to hold on first? Keep Cobb close to first base when you're pitching. How do you do that?
Well, it's like always. He'd steal on anybody.
He stole on you then, huh?
Well, I guess so, yeah.
How was Chris Speaker out there behind you?
Best he's ever been.
Could really cover the ground. And
oh, yeah.
Good arm.
And good arm. And he played in closer than 90% of the center fielders.
Kind of dangerous, isn't it? Get that ball over his head.
He could get back. He could go back.
I heard that he used to make some unassisted double plays. Playing shallow, you know, the runner on second base, and a low line drive.
I don't remember.
You don't remember any of those?
Making one while I was there. See, he was over there one season.
That's right, yeah. He traded. Cleveland, then. Mm-hmm. How did the team feel about losing Speaker to Cleveland? Did that, the players themselves, were they a little upset at that, or?
Tilly Walker. They got Tilly Walker. He played his Speaker plays. He did good. I don't know if he's still living Lottie over in Tennessee.
Oh, is that right?
He was a patrolman, highway patrolman. I stopped by and saw him a couple of times.
Must have done all right in taking Speaker's place and winning the pennant the next year.
The next 2 years. No, next 16, year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Speaker was pretty unhappy. I guess he didn't sign a contract, did he, for 16? They cut his pay or something?
No, no.
It was a contract dispute, I thought.
I don't know why they traded him. I don't know that.
Well, what was it like pitching in the World Series there?
Well, just like the other game.
Didn't make you more excited,
no,
or you took
no,
it in stride,
no,
huh?
Not a bit.
How did you do? I forgot. I don't have it here.
I won 3 and lose 1.
In the series?
In two series.
You played the Dodgers in 15, was it?
No, 16.
The Phillies in 15, huh? Yeah, who'd you pitch against then?
Alexander.
Did you beat him?
No, he beat me 3-1.
Is that right?
Yeah. In the 8th inning, it was 1-1. And the man led off with a little pop fly back to first base. The first baseman got his hands on it, but he couldn't hold it. And Ben Groff came up and hit a sharp ball to Barry on second base. And Barry wheeled to throw to Scott for double play, and Scott didn't cover. And he just hesitated long enough till Ben Groff reached first. They put a man on first and second and nobody out. And then they sacrificed up the second and third. And Kravath came up and he hit a ball, hit the ground and right in front of the plate and doused 20 feet there. They just gave him a man on third base time to score. Then they scored another run. The next fella up hit the ball to the infield. And I aired it. Because I slipped and fell. You see, it rained till about the 10 o'clock the night, the day of the game. It burnt 10,000 gallons of gasoline.
I've seen pictures of that, yeah. Mm. Yeah. They burned that gas. Feels pretty wet still, though, huh?
Yeah. Then I beat them 2-1. Next game.
Alexander, quite a pitcher, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. He was a good pitcher. Wonderful pitcher.
Well, in 1916, then. Wasn't quite as good a year, but still a pretty good year.
Yeah. Well, I went on the road in 16 or 17, and I won 7 games, and went home and lost 5 straight games. They scored 7 runs off of me in 5 games, and I lost all of them. 2-1 ball game and 3-1-0 ball game.
This was 1917 now. July or August or mid-season was this? When you lost these 5?
I don't remember. Just I hurt my arm in August of September. But Dutch Leonard scuffled on the bench in August, fell and broke his arm, and that left 3 of us to start all the game.
Which 3 now? You, Ruth, and Mays?
No, me and Ruth and Foster. Then I stood up on that till about the middle of September, and I arm went bad on me.
You're pitching every third day?
Yeah.
When your arm went bad, what do you mean? It just hurt?
Tore ligament in the shoulder.
You never really got that back again, did you, after
that? Oh, no. No. I knew I was through, because next morning I couldn't raise my arm like that.
Did you have any doctors looking at it?
No.
The teams, didn't they have trainers, or didn't they?
They had trainers, that was all.
They didn't really know enough about it. If today that happened to some star pitcher, they'd send him to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't do that then.
That's right.
Tell me about this great game in 1917. The no-hitter.
Well, Ruth started, walked the first man.
And he went and kicked the umpire or something, didn't he?
He charged the umpire and didn't hit him.
Well, why did he get thrown out if he didn't hit him?
Well, I guess he cussed him enough to be thrown out.
And who was the umpire again?
Rick Owens.
Rick Owens.
Yeah. So, Bear was the manager then. He told me to go out there and stall so they get a man warmed up. And I went out there, I didn't pitch but three balls.
Practice pitches?
I did five warm-up pitches. And the first pitch I threw to the batter, fellow tried to steal, threw about the second base. And,
the catcher threw him out, or did you pick him off?
Oh. No, catcher threw him out. And I just threw two more balls and got two out. And when I came in to the bench, Barry asked me if I wanted to finish the game. I said, yeah, I'd be all right. He said, go down and warm up. So I went down and warmed up and went out of that. And from then on, the easiest game I ever pitched my life.
How do you account for that?
Well, my ball was breaking. I could beat anybody if my ball was breaking.
But when you first went out there, you were just supposed to stall till somebody else did get warmed up. There's no plan of your finishing the game.
That's right.
You didn't plan to pitch a no-hitter that day, did you?
No, I didn't have any idea.
Were there any well-hit balls off you that...
One ball was hit hard in the ninth inning.
This was Washington, right, you're playing?
Yeah. Henry.
Oh.
Henry, the catcher, line one to Duffy Lewis's left field. That's the only ball that was hit hard off of me.
Did you throw many pitches?
No.
You didn't walk anybody. It was a perfect game, wasn't it?
That's right.
So you couldn't have gotten in any trouble that way.
No.
That's an amazing game.
Yeah.
Was it listed as a no-hitter right away in the papers?
Oh, yes, yes. Gave me a no-hitter. Then come along a little bit later and gave me a perfect game.
I see. It wasn't a perfect game at first, though, because you had to face that other batter.
That's right. But I retired 27 men in order.
Where was that played?
Boston.
Boston. A very big crowd for that one? Remember?
I don't remember about the crowd. It wasn't on the field like the other.
What did your teammates think about that game?
Well, they were tickled to death. They thought we ought to have a perfect game to start with.
How about the Babe? Did he congratulate you?
No, I don't remember.
You're still mad he got thrown out of that game.
Yeah.
Any other highlights of that game that stick in your mind?
No.
Because that's one of the most unusual games ever played, and I'd like to have anything you can think about here on the tape.
No, I don't have anything unusual about it.
It's kind of a routine game, huh?
Yeah, just routine.
What was the score?
4-0.
It wasn't against Walter Johnson, was it?
No, Doc Ayers.
Ayers?
Ayers. Doc Ayers.
Doc Ayers. Did you get any hits as a batter?
I don't think so.
Did you like the bat?
Oh, yeah.
What pitcher doesn't it? Did the umpires give you any trouble?
Not a bit. I went, since I was sheriff, I arrested a man here from Cincinnati for killing a man. And he confessed to me that he killed this man. And I had to go up there as a witness. And when I came out of the courthouse, man walked up to me and says, "You don't know me, do you?" I said, "No, I don't believe or do, but I know I've seen you." He says, "I was umpire with Rick Owens in that game. I can't think of his name. Since I had that stroke, you know, I can't think of name."
Did you have any favorite umpires? Any people you'd like to have behind the plate when you're pitching?
No.
Like Tommy Connolly or?
No. They all treated me mighty nice.
Billy Evans, I guess, was pretty well liked by the players.
Yeah, he didn't like Ruth. Ruth didn't like him.
I guess Evans had a run-in with Cobb a couple of times, too. Well, what happened after... what about the World Series of 1916 again? I don't think I touched on that. How did you...
I pitched first and last game, won both of them.
This was against the Dodgers then. Mm-hmm. You won this series, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. 4-1.
4-1.
We won the 15 series, 4-1.
So you won two games of that one then?
No, I won one game in the 15 and won two games
in
16.
You remember Harry Frazee?
Yeah.
He bought the club from Lannan, I guess, after the 16th season, right?
Yeah.
Did he give you a raise in pay?
No, hell no. He didn't give anybody. He was just like the John's Automobile Company. They thought they'd get by on the damn get by on the reputation. He sold me and Lewis, Mays, Leonard, Scott, and Haley. He just cleaned the team.
That was a great team that he broke up with.
Oh, yeah. One of the best.
He got into financial trouble, I guess. He had a...
I don't just see money bad, that's all.
I understood that he was a Broadway producer, and he had some plays that didn't work out, so he had to sell his club. I guess that didn't make him very popular in Boston.
Oh, guess not.
Well, you though weren't sold right away. Okay, you tore this ligament in mid-September 1917, right?
How's that?
You tore the ligament in your arm.
Yeah, that's right.
And did you come home then? Or
no.
You stayed with the club?
Stayed with the club.
Where did they finish in 17?
Second.
White Sox beat you out, huh?
Yeah, we were a little long ahead when Dutch Leonard broke his arm. We'd have won the pennant that year if he hadn't have broken his arm.
That was a pretty good team, though, the White Sox.
Yeah, it was a good team.
Maybe they're even better in 1919. But when did you join the Navy?
After the season in 1917.
And where'd you go?
Went to Boston, and then they went to Harvard, got a commission.
What did you do at Harvard?
When we took the examination for officer training school, they picked 7 of us to go to Annapolis, and there are about 350 go to Harvard. And we stood by in Boston waiting for Annapolis to open. And they opened a month late, and the wires said, "We can't accommodate you, go to Harvard." So I had to go to Harvard a month late. And I came out about 19th one.
Went to school for a couple of months up there, was that it?
It's three months.
You commissioned an ensign, were you? An ensign? Huh? In the Navy, you commissioned an ensign?
Yes, sir.
What did you, surprised they let you in with your bad arm? Where did you go then once you were commissioned?
I didn't go in at the place because the war was about over. And we just stood by in Boston until it was over.
Did you hear much about a lot of ball players jumping to the shipyards?
No, I didn't hear about them jumping to the shipyard, no.
Quite a few of them that did, and it was, they were accused of kind of avoiding the draft.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Jackson was, a lot of Comiskey's players from that good 1917 team, they went into the shipyards. Comiskey didn't want to let them come back because he felt they weren't being very patriotic. Okay, you got discharged then after the war's over. You still belong to Boston, though, right?
Yeah.
That's when Frazee sold you?
Yes, sir.
Were you with any? Were you sold with anybody else, or just? You weren't sold in the Ruth deal, were you?
No. Ruth came over to New York one year later.
How about Joe Bush? Was he?
No.
Wasn't one of the Wade Hoyt, he came. Well, how'd you like going to the Yankees then, in 1919?
Well, I liked it all right, but I knew I was through as a pitcher.
Was Ed Barrow did Ed Barrow come over yet? Or who was the, Harry Sparrow, was he the businessman there? Who was the running the club for?
The Yankees?
Yeah.
Oh.
A guy named Harry Sparrow, didn't he?
I don't know.
Did you meet Jake Rupert?
Yeah.
Well, how'd things go in 1919?
I think I won about 9 and lose 9. I think that's about right. I don't.
And who's the manager?
McGraw.
Well, I thought you were the Yankees here.
Oh, hell.
Oh, Miller Huggins.
Yeah, Huggins. Yeah.
How'd you get along with Huggins? Yeah. How about Roger Peckinpah? Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah. I believe he just died.
I had a real nice interview with him up in Cleveland a few years ago. He's a pretty good shortstop.
Yeah, we went to Washington and World Series, made, I don't know, 5 or 6 errors in one game.
Yeah. I asked him about that. He said that it was a bad day, muddy ball, and some of his throws were, might have been picked up by Joe Judge, I guess, the first baseman. Could have fielded them in good weather, but it kind of was hard to. And he says the scorers actually wanted Pittsburgh there playing on. Hannes Wagner had the record for the most errors by a shortstop, which was not a good record. They wanted him to break that. So they gave him a couple more errors. Max Carey claims that they took a hit away from Carey and gave an error to Peckinpah. He says, I should have had that fifth hit. He had 4 hits that day. He should have had 5 out of 5. So there's a lot of controversy around those errors.
Yeah.
But what was your team then of the Yankees when you went over there? Do you remember the lineup? And Peckinpah.
Herzog at third base.
Herzog.
And Doyle was second base.
Who's that?
Doyle. Larry Doyle.
Doyle?
Yeah.
The Yankees?
And Merkel was first baseman.
How about Wally Pipp?
First baseman. Herzog was third. Center fielder, Red Murray was left fielder, and Josh DeVoe was right fielder.
Did the,
No.
That's the Giants.
That's the Giants.
The next year. You were with the Giants the next year, in 20, right? Or no?
No.
No, you were the Yankees, that's right, okay.
That was
That's the old Giant team?
Yeah.
What about Fred Merkel, speaking about the Giants? Did he, that boner he pulled, did that bother him much? Did he talk much about
it? I never heard him mention it.
He really had a good career, and that little thing that happened was, he was a rookie, I guess.
Yeah.
A pretty good ball player. Because he didn't play much with those guys. So, the Yankees had Wally Pipp, right?
Yeah.
And Aaron Ward?
Yeah. So that's
second.
Peckinpah. Peckinpah.
And Joe, who played third base for them? Wasn't Joe Dugan yet, was it?
No. Darnpuck, I can't remember. Names.
And they had Whitey Witt.
Yeah.
And was Bob Musil up there yet?
Yeah, came up.
About that time, huh? Do you remember the game Ray Chapman was hit?
Yeah.
Did you see, were you at that game?
Yeah.
Could you tell me what you remember about that incident?
Well, Mays was pitching, and he had got Chapman out on a little slow out curve every time he came to bat. And what I think, when Chapman got the bat at that time, he said, "Now I'm going to knock that ball out of the park." Instead of him throwing him a slow out curve, he's coming over with a fastball, and Chapman didn't move, he just paralyzed him. He hit him right in the temple.
He guessed wrong, didn't he? Chapman guessed wrong.
Yeah.
Expecting that curve. He just crumpled up in a heap on the ground, huh?
No, he got up and went to first base, collapsed down there.
Must have been something to see. Did Mays throw at the batters, do you think?
I don't think so.
He had that reputation, of course.
Here we are. I never think he would hit. I don't know. I never threw at a batter in my life. I hit Joe Jackson in the head.
What happened there? How did that happen?
Well, there were two or three men on, and we pitched high and inside to Jackson, and I threw three balls, and I could see Jackson, knowing that I wasn't going to walk him. By God, and I pitched the same ball in there, and he didn't move. Caught him out in there.
And knock him out?
Yeah. No, he's about a week.
Huh.
But I never threw at him.
Don't you brush him back a little bit, though, to keep him loose?
No, I just... You beat on this pitch?
No, generally speaking.
Well, yeah. You brush them back a little once in a while.
Who was the toughest batter to pitch against, do you remember? Anybody stand out?
Joe Jackson.
Jackson. You never had a chance to pitch against Ruth, did you?
One time, one season, when he was Boston and I was the Yankee.
Did you get him out?
Yeah.
That kind of a strange feeling, pitching against somebody who's been your teammate?
So. Well, no, that didn't make any difference.
They might have some inside knowledge about you that they take advantage of. What was Carl Mays like off the field? Do you remember? Did you know
good boy. Uh-huh. Good fellow. Uh-huh.
He was just a very fierce competitor, is that it?
Yeah, that's right. He just liked to win.
Were you with the team the day he walked off the field in Chicago? Just went home?
Mays? Uh-huh.
No. Do you remember that? No, he was with the Boston team then. That's right. That's when Boston's got rid of him. In 1919, you were already with the Yankees then.
Yeah.
He just walked off the field in the middle of the game and wouldn't play anymore. And Frazee sold him to the Yankees then. He joined them in August that year, 1919. What was the matter with Miller Huggins as a manager?
Well, a little bitty fellow, and dried up and sarcastic as the devil. I guess he's a good manager, but I didn't like him.
Kind of a guy was Wally Pipp.
Good boy. Roomed with him.
Oh, did you?
Yep. From Schulte and Pipp and I had an apartment there.
I've interviewed Bob Schulte.
He lives up in
Syracuse. I had a real good interview with him. He lives up on the 20th floor of an apartment building. In Syracuse.
My boy went up to Canada, and he drove up there, and I told him to be sure and call Schulte up. And it was snowing, so they go hard. He didn't even stop. He just creeped along.
Well, Wally Pipp was a pretty good hitter, wasn't he?
Yeah, Wally Pipp was a good first baseman.
He was a big one.
Yeah.
A couple of big roommates there, you two. Well, did they cut your pay in 1920?
No.
Didn't pitch much that year, huh?
No.
The arm hurting all 1920?
Oh, yeah.
They couldn't do anything about it, huh? They put you out in the bullpen or keep you as a starter?
No. Just sit on the bench.
So what happened after the 1920 season?
They sent me out to Pacific Coast League in 21.
Who with?
Well, I started out with Vernon. And they knew I had a bad arm, and they released me to San Francisco. And I stayed up there the whole season. Didn't do any good. Pitched 2-1, 2-hit game. That was all.
Did you hang him up after that season?
Yes.
That was the last year, 21 then, huh?
Yeah.
So, what'd you do after you retired?
Went in the automobile business.
Oh. Here in Winston-Salem? You mean you sold automobiles?
Yeah.
That's pretty early for that business, wasn't it?
No, pretty good. I had a Studebaker agency.
Oh.
I sold 150 Studebakers that year.
How did you happen to get into that?
Well, I don't know.
Did your reputation as a ball player help you get into business, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Right. Helped me be elected sheriff.
When were you elected sheriff?
36.
Were you in the automobile business until then? Or?
No, I went out of the Depression, put down to that. Everybody went broke here.
Did you still have the farm? Or?
No.
When did you get married?
26.
Is this some lady you'd known around here? Or?
No, she was a school teacher. She'd been here a couple of years.
But it wasn't, she didn't know you during your baseball career though, did she?
Well, she knew of me, that's all. She was from South Carolina.
So Did you want to become sheriff, or did somebody suggest it?
I wanted getting somebody, some business so I could eat, that's all.
It's the job, huh?
I stayed here that 34 years.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I like it.
Were you living here then? Did you live here?
Yeah.
How long have you lived in this house?
I moved here in 34. I elected in 36.
Do anything stand out in your career in baseball? Any very funny incidents?
I did that 34 years.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I like it.
Were you living here then? Did you live here?
Yeah.
How long have you lived in this house?
I moved here in 34. I elected in 36.
Anything stand out in your career in baseball? Any very funny incidents in games? You know, crazy things happen in baseball games. Anything stand out as, aside from that great game, anything unusual sticks in your mind?
I don't remember anything.
How'd you like spring training? Like to go down to Florida? Where did you go?
Well, in Boston, we went to Hot Spring, Arkansas. Oh. That's the best place in the world to train. Then in the Yankees, we went to Jacksonville, Florida.
Did you feel like you needed a spring training to get loosened up? Or?
No, I always went to Guilford County. I mean, to Guilford College. And
kept in shape over there, huh?
Yeah.
You probably never got out of shape, did you, during the winter months?
No, I hunted every day. Bird hunt.
Eddie Rausch would never like to go to spring training. He'd always say he was in shape, you know. He'd hold out just to avoid the spring training. Start right in, so. I wondered if you felt that you it really serves a purpose getting that kind of conditioning in before the season began.
Yeah. I liked it all right.
Well, does anything else stand out in your mind about your career that I could?
No, not I know all.
Let's see, there must be something else here. You get to know Dick Hoblitzel very well? Dick Hoblitzel?
Hoblitzel? Oh, yeah.
He was a sheriff, too.
Yeah.
follow the game much today?
Well, I look at every game that's on TV. No. They built a park here. They named it after me. Here in the Shore Field. Best minor league park in the country.
That's their professional team plays there in the Carolinas?
Boston has a team here.
When did they build that? When was that?
54.
That was nice. Did you go out?
Yeah. The old park over here burned up. Burned it down. Had to build a park.
Well, we'll shut this off now. Hey, you knew Ben Johnson?
Yes, sir. Doing well.
Very good.
Yes, sir. You're a good friend of mine.
You got your World Series tickets, huh?
Yeah.
Remember anything about him? Anything else? Or
no.
You see him very often? Or?
No, I didn't see him very often.
Is he a pretty nice guy?
Yeah, good. One of the best we ever had.
I'm writing a book about Ben Johnson.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I'm very anxious to meet people who knew him.
Yeah.
And not many knew him. A lot of ball players knew of him, but didn't really know him.
Well, I knew it. Well, I went up there one time and we didn't have tickets. I called him up, said, come up here. Went up there and said, how many do you want? I told him, he got them out.
Great. Well, that's a new side of Ben Johnson I didn't know.
Yes.
Okay, here I am, leaving Ernie Shore in Winston-Salem, getting lost in traffic. It's about 1:35 in the afternoon of March 12th, or is it March 13th? I drove up from Fayetteville, where we're visiting Gordon and Randy this morning, left about 10 minutes to 8, it's about a 120-mile trip. Just passing another cutoff I probably should take, and that. Car's feeding on here, getting in my way. I better shut up for a while. 3:11. Here's my cutoff right up here to High Point. Okay, let me try this again now. I'm finally on the right road to High Point. No more traffic jams, I trust. I left Fayetteville this morning about 10 minutes to 8, and this 120-mile trip to Winston-Salem. Stopped for breakfast around 9 in Sanford, and then went on up through Greensboro and over to Winston-Salem. I'm looking for Ernie Shore's home at 1212 West 4th Street. I got lost a little bit, got to a 1212 on some other street, which I thought was 4th, a run-down ramshackle rooming house with paint falling off the walls, and nobody home, and dog barking. I couldn't believe he'd lived there.
So I went to a neighbor's to find out, nobody home at the neighbor's. I finally ran down some street cleaners or some truck in the street there, and they said 4th Street was over farther. So I went over someplace else and found it and got to this home, Ernie Shore's home, around 5 after 11. It's a beautiful sunny day in the mid-50s here in northern North Carolina. I was greeted at the door by a lady whom I thought was his daughter, but it turned out to be his wife. I thought it was the gal I talked to on the phone. But a nice lady in her 70s, I would suspect. She's 13 years younger than he is, so it's she'd be 74. He'll be 87 in 2 weeks or so. She has a broken arm. She fell and broke her arm while trying to put the key in the door the other day. Can't move it. But she was very pleasant. She's been so nice. Ernie was sitting in the living room in a chair there with his cane watching some soap opera or quiz show. I guess they were watching together. And after I got set up and organized, well, they shut that off. So the interview proceeded. It was not a good interview. I didn't think it would be from my previous chatting with Ernie Shore last Saturday. I met him up here on our way through Saturday at a friend's house, and because of the company there and the circumstances, it was not suitable for an interview there, and I Rita and Kathy in the car, and they'd have to wait around. Besides, I wanted to see his scrapbooks and pictures, and I'm glad I waited for that, as it turns out. So, we got talking. He's very quiet, doesn't say much. He's a little hard of hearing, but I talk loud, so he heard most of my questions. His mind is clear, but he has trouble speaking because of the stroke he had 2 years ago. And coupled with his natural reticence, he just didn't have too much to say. As you can tell from the tape, there are long periods of silences. I was hoping he might add to his previous remark, or thinking I could think of some questions. I didn't have many questions with me. I thought we'd have enough to go on for at least 90 minutes, but I was wrong. I should have had some backup questions to pass along during those dry spells. It was a very nice house there, modest house in a pleasant middle-class neighborhood. The furnishings were very nice. I didn't take much note of them, but it's a well-kept house, neat house. And so we talked for about an hour there, and then when I could see we just weren't going to get any farther, I shut it off. Then he began to talk a little bit later about how he knew Ben Johnson, a good friend of his. So I switched it back on, hoping to pick up some more data, but then he didn't say anything more about Ben Johnson. I'm going to pass somebody now, see if nobody's coming the other way. I made it. So I asked him, they brought me coffee, Mrs. Shore did. Some lady came in as kind of a housekeeper while they're both in trouble. There's a funeral. Slow funeral, it says. So she brought me a cup of coffee and a very pleasant situation there. But it wasn't much of an interview. I finally shut the thing and asked to see some scrapbooks and pictures. She brought out a piles of stuff, scrapbooks that are falling apart, good old pictures, and I thought first I'd better get my camera in and start taking some pictures. I had it with me, pictures of the pictures, but there was so much there I knew I wouldn't be able to take too many pictures of what was available. It didn't look like the situation would be good for picture taking. I'd be using up time too. So there are clippings, newspapers, little booklets, pictures galore. So I mentioned to Mrs. Shore that I borrowed some pictures and made copies and sent them back. She said, yeah, that's all right. So I said, would 20 pictures be? Oh, no, all right. So we're going on, and I saw scrapbooks of clippings, and I asked about those. I'll take anything you want. So I wound up taking practically everything he's got. Not everything. There are a lot of scrapbooks I left behind which deal with his period as sheriff from 1936 to 1970, 34 years of his sheriff. Wow. And yeah, he was in good health, I guess, just a couple of years ago. So I've got all that stuff in the trunk of the car, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to take a copy, make copies of the pictures either myself. Here's a tractor right in the middle of the road, going 10 miles an hour, no passing zone. Okay, I'm going to pass any time. I try. Nobody's coming, so okay. Now, I'm going to have Bob Lee make some copies of these pictures, although there must be 50 to 100 of them in there. Good 5x7, 8x10 close-up individual shots, some action shots. Said it one time, maybe I'd remount a lot of the pictures into another scrapbook and send that back to them. He said I'd probably don't have to do that, but I don't know. I would like to have it in another scrapbook and keep it, but I'm pretty much obliged to send it back. Maybe I can weed out a few things that won't be missed. But they were so kind to me, so pleasant, let me have anything I wanted, but I would feel pretty guilty about it. Anything like that. But maybe something can work you work out. My copies of the newspaper clippings, maybe. Well, they're pretty old and yellowish. So it was along about 1 o'clock, and I decided I better pack up. And so I left there. A few more comments, but this is Shore. Put things, I had to take two trips out of the car, one with my attaché case and a pile of clippings and scrapbooks and everything, and then come back to get the autograph ball and the briefcase and the 35mm camera. I got him to autograph the ball. He has trouble writing now, and he autographed 3 copies of a standard print of him, big one. They're just printed on cheap paper. They gave me some of those, and I had him sign all 3 of them. They have piles of mail there from kids who have sent in, or people have sent in for autographs. No cards, because they don't have any cards of him. Those baseball cards. There may have been 1 or 2, but they don't know of them. But they sent in little cards, not picture cards, or sheets of paper to have autographed and sent back. Because she can't write, she's broken her right arm, and he doesn't write too well. He was able to write the autograph, but they just haven't been able to respond to these cards and letters for autographs. She apologized for not responding to my letter, which I'd sent last week, for this very reason. They couldn't write letters right now. I told her I didn't intend to get a reply, I just sent it to inform them of my coming. Well, the interview was nothing much. At least I do get him talking about that great game. He's the only one that could talk about it left. He's the guy that did it. There's a few little high points from that as I approach High Point. But the aftermath of all these pictures, masses of clippings and things, I don't know, a while of that. All in the back of my car, in the front, they're locked in safely. I've got to take care of that. Honig, this guy who writes these books about various things, the successor to Magic Intersection here. I don't know if I should cut off or not. I suppose I cut off at a grocery store at one of these intersections, but I don't know which one it is. Here's another one up here. Further up. Drugstore Cowboy. I don't think I'm in close enough. Coming in from the north, Ray Hayworth, that is, described how to get to his place coming up from the south. So I just just don't know. There's something else there. Red's discount. And the Baptist Church. Two Right Baptist Church. Mobile Home Park. Here's a Colonel's Catch Seafood. So I'm afraid I might be going, since I'm going the wrong way, I might miss what I'm looking for. And I forgot to leave out what I'm looking for. So that's what I'm doing. So Ernie Shore has been interviewed. Honig was down. He got a lot of pictures and he sends them back as he uses them, is what he says. And he had an interview too with Ernie Shore, which Mrs. Shore said ran about the same length as mine. I don't know how anybody could interview him any longer to get lunch, because he has so much trouble talking and he doesn't say much anyhow. It's just easy for him not to say. It reminded me a lot of Elmer Smith. Elmer Smith kind of interview. So that's about it as we head south to High Point. I'm probably missing my cutoff to right here, but it's now around 2 o'clock. I said I'd be there between 2 and 3 or something, so I'm not very far from this place. But here's the city limits to High Point now, so I know I've gone too far. I have to pull over here and turn around and find out where I'm at and go back up the road. I need to find out from somebody where I'm looking, for. So I'll sign off at this point.